Blog Talk Radio.
Kitchen Politics 123, the radio show. We thank you for joining us. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico.
And I'm Eric Brantley from Michigan.
And tonight we're going to talk about Joe Biden, mostly. He's a change we need and a voice we deserve after 4 years of bullshit under Donald Trump. Narcissistic Donald Trump wants the power of a dictator but has the accountability of a toddler. He's getting his rewards, his just rewards, for being dishonest and a liar. Karma's catching up to him in the worst way. Tonight, we will focus on the achievements of President Joe Biden and the positive changes that have happened under his leadership in America, and we're respected around the world again. Biden has proven repeatedly that he has experience you can trust. He's decisive, determined, and dependable. Others in his administration have the knowledge and maturity to serve America well. Joe Biden is a calm voice of reason. Biden is a regular habit of breaking barriers and building a safe future by rebuilding roads and bridges through the infrastructure bill that he signed, improving unaffordable health care, restructuring job training for an ever-changing globalized world, and giving a voice to voiceless. One nation, one destiny. Joe Biden is what the world craves after 4 years of chaos under Donald Trump. Trump for prison, Biden for president 2024. Call in. Tell us what you think. The number is 515-605-9802. Say your first name and where you're calling from. We're delighted to have Eric Brantley sitting in for Laura Piccarella tonight. Laura has a night off, and you can visit us at kitchenpolitics123.com. We have great articles, the latest one being from Laurie. And, you know, you can read the different articles on there. More articles are coming, and merchandise will be on sale soon. So we're not anti-social, just anti-stupid. Let's get cooking. So, Eric, where do you want to start out?
Well, I do want to start by saying that, number one, I'm glad to be hosting this show again. I'm always grateful for the opportunity, and I'll be glad to take more opportunities in the future. Thank you for having me to this. Another one is I did watch one of the segments that you sent me, MSNBC on the Mehdi Hasan show, where he was talking about the progress, the economic progress made by the Biden-Harris administration, the student debt reduction, the passing of the Inflation Reduction Act, the American Rescue Plan, the COVID relief package. And, you know, he made a very good point in there. And the problem is a lot of people are not seeing this, and they think they're not feeling it because the media is not emphasizing on it well enough. And also a lot of Democrats, even though they're great with policy and ideas, they're usually not that good when it comes to messaging. And so we have to be in front of the camera constantly talking to audiences, talking to voters, talking about what has been done. If they feel something hasn't been done, or if they're not feeling it, we tell them how we're going to help them. We communicate to them. We're going to need the Democratic Party to invest in a marketing firm that's going to really continue to put the message out there in the same way that we see from Democratic governors like Gretchen Whitmer, Gavin Newsom, Laura Kelly, and J.B. Pritzker, and Kathy Hochul. So that's what Democrats have to do, is get better with the messaging, and that's how you attract more voters.
Exactly. And you know, to speak about the successes that Joe Biden, Kamala Harris administration had, for the first time in 50 years, we've had unemployment at the lowest rate at 3.5%. And, nearly 11 million jobs created since 2021, and a record low unemployment rate for Hispanics, a near record low unemployment for African Americans, helped bring gas prices down more than $1.60 from the summer, the peak of summer 2022. He has record low employment rate for people with disabilities. Over 60 million households receive lower costs or free high-speed internet through affordable connectivity programs. And he's reaching out to the rural communities in America where they have no access to the internet, where, information is there. And, just by a press of a button, two clicks of a button, you have information from different sources. The infrastructure investment in our 50 states and DCs and territories throughout tribal nations, the infrastructure is really helping them. And fully vaccinated people across America, adults against COVID-19 is at 79%. We can remember when Donald Trump was in there, he said COVID would go away. It's just that flu. And he was telling all sorts of nonsense about injecting yourself with bleach, and all sorts of nonsense. People were taking horse pills, killing themselves. $15 minimum wage for federal workers and contractors, and it's a norm here, starting in New Mexico soon. Millions of Americans are saving $800 per year in health insurance coverage. We'll have more Americans coverage in any time in the history of the United States. And I could go on and on and on. The historic student debt relief for middle and working class families. Republicans and the Supreme Court tried to block that, but through executive order, Joe Biden is doing his thing to help the American people. So, and the ending of the failed approach to marijuana, a lot of states, including New Mexico, have legalized medical marijuana, and even for recreational purposes. So Joe Biden, in his 2 years, or nearly 3 years now, as president, has done more than Donald Trump did in 4 years. And executive orders protecting reproductive rights, as you know, Roe versus Wade, was killed by the Supreme Court. Successful counterterrorism missions against leaders of Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Strengthening alliances with partnerships to deliver for the American people. Republicans had it like, if it's not their way, then there's no way. And we rallied countries around the world to support Ukraine in their response to Russia and Putin's aggression. So, he has done more in 4 years than Trump has ever done in his 4 years. So he always knew America was great. He didn't need to, depend on Hitlerism and fascism to get his message across. He's about peace and love and working together and building a strong union. Yes. That's what Joe Biden is about.
Right. And you know what? I agree for the most part that Joe Biden is definitely a lot better. So he's definitely one of the best Democrats in terms of attempting to reach across the aisle to talk with Republican politicians about certain policies. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that there's an upside and a downside to that. The upside being that he's not trying to be divisive. He's not trying to say it's all good one way and all bad the other way, and not shutting out any voices. I mean, he will hear people out and he'll let them speak, which I think is professional, and it speaks really good to his character and his personality. The downside to that is that I'm seeing a lot of what we saw under the Obama administration, where after 2010, when Mitch McConnell took the Senate and John Boehner, I think it was John Boehner, had the House of Representatives, and they blocked 95 to 99% of the things that Obama attempted to do. The problem is, sometimes I feel that my main problem with President Biden, if anything, is that a lot of times he will be too nice to the Republicans, and sometimes they end up getting their way. Sometimes people might have felt that he caved to Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who basically watered down the Infrastructure Act, That was initially mm-hmm. supposed to be $3.5 trillion, and then it got watered mm-hmm. all the way down to $1.2 trillion, I believe. Or, no, actually, no. I think initially Bernie Sanders proposed that it'd be $6 trillion. It went down to $1.2 trillion. So, I mean, mm-hmm. there is an upside and a downside to that, but at the end of the day, we still have to put our foot down and let the Republicans mm-hmm. know that we are here to stand for the people. We're here to help reduce your student debt. We want to give you access and affordability to health care. With same with education, we're gonna try our best to not waste as much of our taxpayer dollars on mm-hmm. Military spending. We're still keeping an effective military, and we're still gonna mm-hmm. add more and more jobs to the economy per month. I say that so far this year, over 2 million jobs have been added to the U.S. economy. In January, we had over 517,000. February, over 311,000. March, over 236,000. April, 253,000. May, 339,000. June, 209,000. And July was a little bit lower, but still a success. Over 187,000 jobs created. With all those numbers combined, the numbers told to be just over 2 million. More and more jobs mm-hmm. are being added to the economy, which means people have room for growth and prosperity and opportunity. And so this is what Democrats need to be emphasizing on. This is what Biden, Harris, Pelosi, Schumer, Bernie, all of them need to say, this is what we're doing, and here's how we're making it so people can make ends meet. And this is why I continue to support the Democratic Party, and this is why we are here to back the 2024 campaign for President Biden and Vice President Harris for the next election.
Yes. Another thing that no other president since FDR did was cut child poverty in half. Joe Biden did the Sweet American Rescue Plan. A lot of Republicans voted against it, but have the nerve now this summer to go back in their district saying that, oh, yes, it's because of us we have this American Rescue Plan. And not one single one of these fascist rat bastards voted for it. You know, as we near the 2024 elections, the first term of President Joe Biden, when he took office, the nation was in turmoil. The COVID-19 pandemic raged due to the previous administration's inability to confront the issue. The country was in shock after the January 6th riot on the Capitol building, which put countless members of Congress, their lives in danger, democracy at peril. You know, we're supposed to be a bastion of democracy, and these fascist Hitler wannabes, led by Donald Trump, led this revolt because it couldn't accept the 2020 election results and everything. You know, what did this fascist Donald Trump do? He rolled back climate protections. I mean, climate change is something that's real. We've seen what happened in California. We've seen what happened in Maui. The Trump administration took us over to the Paris Accord and everything. And so it was topsy-turvy with that administration. Now, Joe Biden has put us back in the climate accord and everything. And America's also on shaky ground economically when Trump was president because the pandemic brought unemployment to its highest rate since the Great Depression. And businesses struggled to stay afloat amid lockdowns and labor shortages and what have you. So, this bipartisan leadership at a time of intense division and turmoil, he kept that promise, Joe Biden, and now we'll have a record 11 million jobs and counting. When Donald Trump was in there, we lost jobs every other month. It was, ridiculous. And now Trump had the nerve to go on TV, spewing his lies as usual. He's such a narcissistic ass that, no matter what he says or does, people of that ilk, the MAGA supporters, just believe him. And it's sickening. What would it take for them to stop supporting this Nazi, this fascist? Four indictments and still support them. It's just, I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. There's a part of me that doesn't know the answer to that question, but then the other part of me has a theory. And I'll tell you this right now. If I didn't know any better, I would say that for a lot of people, a lot of the MAGA voters, I don't really believe that there's a single thing that he could do that mm-hmm. would make them stop liking him and stop supporting him, because as much as it pains me to admit that he ever said anything right, I will say this. There were two things that he said that turned out to be true. Number one, when he said back in People magazine of 1998 or 99, he said, if I ever run for president, I'm going to run as a Republican because Republicans are the dumbest group of voters and they will eat up any lie. Well, that turned out to be true, as we're seeing now. And then the other thing that he said from his campaign from 2016 was when he said, I could go in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I would still keep my support. Well, even though he didn't literally do that, the fact of the matter is that I think that what that was a it was a metaphor, so to say. So he's basically saying, I could say or do whatever radical, crazy thing, and you will still like me. And unfortunately, that's true. And he's been indicted twice, three times now. He has, you know, staged the Capitol. I mean, he outsourced over 200,000 jobs. He ramped up the drone war, and they're still by his side, and they still like him. And so he's basically saying it doesn't matter what, they'll be by me forever. And it turns out that that's the case because some of them have straight up said they will support him no matter what. And now you're hearing a lot of the MAGA voters saying that even if he goes to prison, they will still vote for him. And these are the same people who don't believe that felons should vote, but here they're going to vote for a guy who's a possible felon. So so to answer the question, I don't think that there's anything he can say or do that'll just make them drop him. Even if he decides to, you know, for whatever reason, but he's not going to do this because he's too narcissistic, he could drop out of the race, but you're still going to have a MAGA base, and their best hope is to either – they probably just won't vote, or maybe they'll vote for the next fascist like Ron DeSantis or somebody. But besides that, there really isn't much else.
Yeah, it's like – I mean, 75 years ago, or probably a bit more now, Americans went into the war and fought the Germans and Nazis and Italian fascists and what have you. We helped Great Britain and allies, and we liberated France and everything. How can people actually, you know, have a conscience or lack thereof, you know, about, you know, embracing Nazism and fascism? The whole thought is just revolting and repulsive. This is America where it should be the bastion of democracy, but yet still embracing fascism. You know, it's scary, you know, because it was just a dry run, I feel, in 2021 when Donald Trump incited this riot, this insurrection. And in 2024, God forbid, if he's a Republican nominee, then, you know, they're going to try even harder this time. And again, we won't allow it. But it shouldn't come to this stage. I hope Republicans have better sense and nominate somebody besides Trump, because Trump is a danger to democracy and everything. So now, Joe Biden's greatest accomplishment as president of the United States so far. Like I said at the top of the show, he passed the $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure package. The increased investment in the national networks of bridges and roads, airports, public transport, and national broadband internet, as well as waterways and energy systems. You know, and, you know, the energy systems, the grids, for example, in Texas need fixing. But, you know, Governor Abbott, a Republican, like Trump and a lot of Republicans out there, don't know what they're doing, you know, and the people suffer because of it. And, you know, with this infrastructure bipartisan package, the biggest thing since FDR, New Deal program, he's just continuing the work of what LBJ, FDR did, progressing America forward with these programs, because faced or not, the last time we had the infrastructure program was during Ike's term in the 1950s, Dwight Eisenhower, and back then, 70% or the rich people, the wealthy, paid 70% in taxes. You get what I'm saying? So this thing where, oh, you know, corporations don't pay taxes and, you know, they'd rather invest or reinvest in their company and the shareholders and everything, that's just poppycock. Because we all know that, you know, they're going overseas to outsource jobs because, you know, there's more labor there. There's no labor unions there to protect the workers and everything, you know. So they give these jobs to China and, you know, the Far East and wherever else, where, you know, they can just get away with anything. There's no labor laws and everything. And in America now, they're trying to build, you know, get away with murder, basically, by, you know, like, getting rid of child labor laws and everything. We see it a lot in the South, for example, in Arkansas, in Tennessee, and in a lot of these factories where children are literally dying you know, Montana, it's happening, you know? So, you know, just ride with Biden people, you know, because it's bipartisan infrastructure package is to help America move forward in the 21st century. And number two, help to get more than 500 million life-saving COVID-19 vaccinations in the arms of Americans through the American Rescue Plan. The Trump administration did nothing, absolutely nothing. Almost daily press conference that Trump had. He was just lying through his teeth as usual, no surprise there. And he was saying, inject yourself with bleach and all sorts of nonsense. UV lights up your ass and everything. Come on. Come on, man. How can you vote for somebody like that?
Well, you know, and that's why I say it's this right now is the very best time for Democrats to really improve on their messaging and really talk to the voters, because Republicans right now are doing us a favor by tearing each other apart. They are, because right now the Republican Party is divided between pro-Trump and anti-Trump. And as long as they're doing that, this right here should be our advantage. And so in a way, Trump's nonsense and his stupidity and his incompetence is supposed to be a gift for us, because they're helping us in a way that they don't even realize.
So do you think if Donald Trump is not a nominee, would they give it to somebody like Chris Christie, or would they more give it to like Ron DeSantis, who's like Trump-like? What's your take on that?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. It's really hard to say, because I know that Trump at this particular point isn't really a fan of either one, because they both kind of turned against him in a way. The whole thing about it is this, is that when we – if it continues this way – so if the nominations were held right now and Trump wasn't in the race, I have a feeling that it would lean a little bit more towards DeSantis. However, what we're seeing right now is that there's a lot more baggage and controversy going on DeSantis' side compared to Christie's side. Now, granted, it's not like Chris Christie's talking a lot of policy either. He's not talking about how to get people health care or what we should do to continue economic growth or how can students afford college and how can they afford to pay off debts. His main thing is Trump is toxic, which is about the only true thing that he is saying. But, you know, at the same time, I would also argue that if it continues like this and Christie continues to surge while DeSantis continues to fall, maybe Chris Christie would have a higher chance to win the nomination in about a year. So, I mean, that's the part that it gets a little complicated, because we've seen how a lot of primaries turn out, and it's quite a mess for a lot of them, to say the least.
Yeah, because as we were talking about earlier before we went on the show and air, that in New Hampshire primary, for the first time, Trump is not in the lead. I think Chris Christie is like a point or two ahead in the lead in New Hampshire, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so it was New Hampshire. That was the poll that I saw that Chris Christie was ahead of DeSantis.
Yes, yes. And as we all know, that New Hampshire is a first primary state. It's going to be next February. I don't know the date exactly. And then 2 weeks later, the Iowa caucuses. Traditionally, those two states have the first primary and caucuses. And, you know, the first top three finishers are usually the people who advance later on, the Super Tuesday and what have you. And it's going to be interesting, because if Trump is thrown in jail, or if he has to wear an ankle bracelet, then that diminishes his candidacy even more. Because, you know, if, God forbid, he's elected president in November 2024, we'll have a constitutional crisis. We'll have a person in prison who's elected president. Can he, like, pardon himself? Wouldn't that be a conflict of interest? You know, there's nowhere in the Constitution that says the president can pardon himself. Maybe he can pardon himself, but the state convictions, you know, he has no say over that, you know, so it'll be a constitutional crisis, and God help us if Trump is elected again. Another thing that Joe Biden, he stopped a 30-year streak of federal inaction on gun violence by signing the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act that created the enhanced background checks closed the boyfriend loophole and provided funds for youth mental health. He made a $369 billion investment in climate change, the largest ever in American history through the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. So now, you know, for the past 30 years, the NRA has been calling shots in the Republican Party, you know, and the Republican Party basically has no testicular fortitude stand for the NRA. We've had mass shootings almost every other week in America. That's been going on and on and on with no end in sight. They're against gun control, and every 2 to 4 years, Republicans go on the campaign stump saying, oh, Democrats want to take their guns. They've been doing it since Harry Truman being president, you know, and up to now, we'd have Jimmy Carter, we had LBJ, we had JFK, we had, who else, Obama, Clinton, and nobody,
you know, Jimmy Carter, yeah.
Jimmy Carter, you know, so... I mean, as soon as we mention guns, that's what these right-wing lunatics say. I mean, haven't they gotten through the head that Democrats don't want guns? All we want is more responsible gun owners. You know, what's your take on this gun situation?
You know what? I think it's quite simple. To me, I have no idea what goes on in the mind of a person when they say that they want their kids to be safe in schools, but then when you have people in the Congress and the Senate that are legislating to do gun control and gun safety and to protect the kids in school, they seem to vote against that legislation almost all of the time. And this was before MAGA. So, I mean, we saw this under Trump. We saw it under Obama, Bush, Clinton. You know, Bill Clinton was his administration had installed the banning of the assault rifles. And I think he did that in 1993 or four, and that expired in 2003 or four. So that was under Bush. And of course they didn't bother to bring it back. That's what I think this administration should bring back. And I think that to me, it's like liberals have kids, conservatives have kids, and anybody else has kids. One thing that we all should agree on is that everybody wants their kids to be safe. So voting for this type of bill, or voting at least supporting that ideology, should be a no-brainer. And so to me, it just shows that a lot of them are heartless. They don't care. You have these Republican congressmen like Louie Gohmert who go up and say, I'm tired of thinking that, you know, I'm tired of liberals thinking that we're heartless, and I'm tired of you think that we don't care. And I did a video in response to his question where I said, yeah, this is exactly what we think. This is you exactly, you don't care. Because if you care, you'd have voted for it. It didn't cost you a penny. And so that, to me, is why I say we just have to vote against all Republicans at all costs. And like you said, it may not be able to happen in every state. It's very next to impossible in the Deep South and in places like Utah and what have you. But this is why I suggest we vote blue no matter who, on all levels, in every election, from the top of the ticket to the bottom of the ticket.
Because, you know, I think it was last year, was it even Ohio that was recent, where they had an election, and it was about abortion, and women's rights have been trampled on by Republicans. They want to control women's bodies. They want to control, you know, what they do, what they say. It's just pretty much disgusting, really. And Ohio pulled through the millennials and through the Generation X and Generation Z who are coming up, you know, and they're saying, hey, you know, women make up 50% of the population, is more than half of the population. So why should any man make any decision regarding reproductive rights? On the committee that control health reproduction rights, not one single woman who's a Republican is on that. Why is it all men for Republicans? I mean, what's Republicans' deal? They hate women that much, you know? And I can't understand how women would vote Republican this day and age when, you know, the Supreme Court, led by the conservatives, voted to get rid of Roe versus Wade. What are you thinking out there, ladies, who vote Republican, who consistently vote Republican? The Republican Party don't care for you. You know, all they want to do is that, you know, you just stay home, have babies, They'll have a career for yourself. They'll have an education. Barefoot and pregnant. That's the mantra for the Republican Party. That's where in 1930s, 1940s. And, you know, the Republican Party refused to change. And, you know, like, yeah, it helped Democrats in the long run and everything. But can America afford to be a one-party state? The sure as hell not going to be a Republican Party. But the way the Republican Party is going on now and the demographic changes that's happening, like 2045, 2050, America will be no more a majority of white people, but a majority of minority. What will they do then? You know, if they don't have the shit together now and causing all sort of trumped up, bogus, what you would call it, crisis, where none exists. I don't know, everything is fueled by, oh, you know, black, and because you're black, affirmative action helped you. It wasn't a merit-based thing. Da-da-da-da-da. You know, all sorts of garbage, you know, just to distract the American people from, you know, what they should do, you know, like in terms of policy-wise, creating jobs, job training for changing globalized economy, you know, different things. And the Republicans' party just stuck on guns, God's gaze, you know, and all that thing. Abortion, women shouldn't have abortion. All the different things that don't really matter in the long run. It's not bread and butter issues. But because the fascist evangelicals are part of the Republican Party and control them, and the NRA does, this is what we'll have, a real shit show on their side.
Well, you know what? You know, and that's the thing about it, too, is that there's an upside and a downside to what the Republicans did with Roe v. Wade last year. Number one, the whole thing about it is the upside is that they are so far right and so pro-fascist and so extreme that they couldn't even hide it. And so with them not hiding it, that gave more and more Americans the chance to see who they really are. And that's why they lost a lot of seats in the House. Now, granted, they still ended up winning the House at the end, but it was only by one or two seats. But that's why every Republican candidate that was endorsed by Trump, almost all of them had lost. The only ones that won were the ones who were already there, like, you know, Marjorie or Lauren or Jim Jordan or Matt Gaetz. But the only two that ended up winning that were outside of that were J.D. Vance in Ohio and the lady who beat out Liz Cheney in Utah or Wyoming or whichever state it is. I think Wyoming. So, you know, and so the thing about it is that they have nothing else. Their only thing is let's ban abortion. Biden cheated the election. It was stolen. It was rigged. The Democrats are liars and cheaters. And they're not talking any policy substance because Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump were the two leading voices in the Republican Party that said that they did not want the Republicans to run on policy. And that's exactly why they did not win by as big of a margin as they wanted to, because the American people want to hear policy substance. And McConnell and Trump told them, no, we're not giving you substance. We're just going to talk about how Democrats are bad. We're going to talk about how Biden cheated the election and how everything that they do is considered socialism or communism and basically the left-wing version of fascism. So that's how McConnell and Trump screwed the Republican Party. And as long as they keep it up, they're helping us, as long as the Democrats continue to improve on their messaging. They need to take a note from Gretchen Whitmer and Gavin Newsom. That's what they have to do.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. I noticed that, who was it? Was it Ted Cruz or was it Lindsey Graham who challenged the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, to a debate on Fox News? I don't remember which Republican. It was a prominent Republican. I don't think that debate happened.
I want to say that was Ron DeSantis.
Okay. Did DeSantis back out, or what's the deal with that?
I'm assuming that, you know what, I'm just going to assume that he backed out simply due to the fact that I still don't see a debate between them. If I catch a debate between Gavin Newsom and especially somebody like a Ron DeSantis or Lindsey Graham or Ted Cruz, then that will easily promote the chances of him, you know, with him running for president supposedly in 2028. And like I said, I think the very best ticket we could have is President Newsom with Vice President Whitmer or vice versa. If those two have a ticket, it's going to be basically unstoppable as long as we stay on it. Gavin Newsom right now mm-hmm. is for sure one of the best leaders we have in the country.
Definitely. Definitely.
And you know what? Here's mm-hmm. another thing that I want to add in, too, and this is another reason why I encourage people to vote Democrat, is because if you look at some of the policies alone that Gavin Newsom did in California, especially during the time of the pandemic, I mean, I can just give you a handful of things off the top of my head. He provided the proper protection equipment for kids in schools. He gave $22 an hour to fast food and restaurant workers. He gave them a $1,000 – well, he gave them a $600 stimulus check on top of the federal money that they got from the government. And then a few months later, he gave $1,000 each to citizens who were either middle and lower class, like the elderly. He also provided three meals a day to the elderly, the seniors who were living in those homes. And so by doing those things alone, his approval ratings have done nothing but increased and increased. The highest approval rating – so he was at an average of 55 to 58%. The highest approval rating that he had in that state was up to 61. And so that shows you right there that when you do good policies and you actually take action to help better people's lives and to improve the well-being of others – you're going to get better and better ratings. You become more supported. You become more liked, and people are going to want to vote for you. The problem with people like Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, and some of the others we listed is they take no interest in doing any of those things, and that's why some of their ratings are dropping. And, you know, and this is where the Biden-Harris White House also has to take a note. It says, hey, the more you do these things, the more it ups your chances to win. This is what we have to emphasize. This is what we need to continue to promote and capitalize on. And that's why I say this is how you strategize, organize, mobilize, energize, realize. As long as Democrats do that, we should be good.
Exactly, exactly. So the number to call in, ladies and gentlemen, we have three light callers lined up. It's 515-605-9802. Say your first name and where you're calling from. We're delighted to have Eric Brantley, Jr. He's sitting in for Laura Picker tonight. Laura took the night off and everything. So let's get these two callers first. Hello, welcome to Kitchen Parties 123. What's cooking? Hey.
Hello.
Live on air. Hello. Hey,
oh,
this is Lori. And is this?
This is
Lori. Elaine.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Oh, hey. Oh,
is this,
good.
Is this Lori and Elaine is on the line.
Elaine, are you there?
I just called in.
Hi, Elaine.
Oh, okay.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, good.
Good
to have you both here.
I caught the tail end of Eric's talking about energizing, and I've been talking about that all day long on Facebook about becoming an orchestra. We got to start singing.
Singing
the praises of the Democratic Party. We've got to become
an
orchestra.
It's about time, too.
I guess I'll become a drum.
You know what? And people have told me that, and like I said, I'll become a messenger for the Democratic Party if it comes to that point, because people have said that they've enjoyed my rant on things like that.
I have enjoyed his rant, don't you?
Well, you know, we've got to be a good ramp, you know. I correlate it to being a well tuned up orchestra. Every one of us can take a part. Every one of us can talk a point, and every one of us can go out there and do a job. And that's what we have to do. It's not hard.
Nope.
What we have to do is open up our mouths and start singing the praises.
Yes, Elaine, you're absolutely right. And that is from now on, that is what we need to talk about, is Joe Biden and the good things that he's done for the country since he's been president, and also forget about Trump. He's thinking every day. He will be in prison pretty soon, God willing, and just, you know, he's just a nightmare, and we all have PTSD from him, but still, we have to go forward and make sure Biden is our next president once again so that he can continue the work that he started.
I can't take too much more of this negativity.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because here's another thing. I'm glad to hear you say that, and I'm sorry to cut you, but here's another thing I want to add in. To anybody else who's listening to this show, this is why it's so important to emphasize, when you talk about the accomplishments of the Biden-Harris administration, for people who are listening to this, this is not just about promoting Democrats and fighting against Republicans.
We're
talking about the well-being of other humans. Anybody who is listening to this, for example, if you are taking, I don't know, if you're on insulin, for example, if you are paying a crap ton of money for it, just know that, you know, this administration and the Democrats in our Congress and Senate have passed the capping of the cost of insulin at $35 a month. And so that greatly helps the cost for people who are doing that. We've also helped over 8 million Americans who are struggling with medical debt. The Biden-Harris White House had took the medical debt down from $200 billion to $88 billion. That's a huge decrease right there. That's a good improvement. By investing over $500 million into historically black colleges and universities, that also goes towards the student debt reduction for people who attend the HBCUs who have student debt. That helps them pay it off too. So a lot of this is not just about Democrat versus Republican. It's substantive. This is detailed. This is policy that matters, and it helps people. This is the government doing proper governing. Government is doing proper governing, and as long as we continue to do that and tell people that, that's how we succeed.
What are those extra voices?
So, Eric,
in the background?
Yeah, that's what I was hearing. Yeah, if somebody has
somebody
a TV on, please turn it off.
No, there's no TV on.
Yeah.
That was my,
yeah, it's not mine.
That was my partner in crime.
Oh, okay.
Crime here.
I don't know.
Oh, okay,
gotcha,
gotcha.
It wasn't me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
Eric,
man.
You know, you
okay, so check this out now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, check this out. So in New Hampshire, where the first primary event happened in the first week of February, Trump supporters dialed up the rhetoric on civil war and stolen votes outside of the Trump rally that was held there recently. I'm going to play a clip, and, you know, you tell me all what you think about it afterwards. These are Donald Trump supporters. My God.
That's Nazi Germany Hitler. You can't silence your political opponent because you don't agree with him. Joe Biden should be in prison for his bribes.
The vote was stolen. I believe it. In my heart. Remember, they blew up one of the election quarters where they kept all of the Dominion machines. Why'd that blow up?
If Donald Trump were to be found guilty by a jury, where do you see this going?
Civil war. Divide it up, because we can't live together, obviously.
And if he wants me to protect them, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to let him know that I'll do it.
Yeah, so this is the thinking of these people. My God, this is where we're reaching this damn country where, you know, ignoramuses like that man and woman who just spoke on air, you know. That clip was from Morning Joe on MSNBC, by the way. So thank you, Morning Joe, for that. You know, starting with Eric, what do you think about that? You know?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. You know what? Here's what I find to be so hilarious about that type of rhetoric is that, first of all, when people think civil war, you have to think historically. When we had the civil war going on from, you know, 1860 to 65, when we had things like the World War One, World War Two, when we had different wars going on, when you talk civil war, that's usually because there's a particular side that has an ideology or some type of law or policy, a demographic in at a disadvantage. Here's the problem with this type of rhetoric. These people are saying that they want to go to civil war with us because of something that their guy did. And so we're telling them, like, hey, we're not responsible for everything that this guy has said and done. That's why we voted against him. We tried to prevent him from getting to office in the first place, which is why we urged people to vote for Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders in 2016, and why we urged people to vote for Joe Biden or anybody else in 2020. The whole thing about it is this. One thing that I find to be so hilarious is there's a conservative commentator that some of you might be familiar with. His name is Mark Levin. And I listened to him go off on a segment where he was talking about how he thinks the Justice Department and the legal system is – he talked about how the legal system is rigged in favor of Democrats against Republicans. Well, let me – well, you know what? Let me explain why that is entirely objectively false. Number one, if the system was really rigged in favor of Democrats against all Republicans, then guess what? I got news for you, Mark. That means that people like Dick Cheney would be in prison. That means that people like Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan would have went to prison for their war crimes, for the drug smuggling, for a lot of racist acts and policies. They would have went to prison for that. So they sit here and make the argument to say, oh, this is a thing against Trump. Well, first of all, if that was the case, a lot of them would have been locked up. A lot of them would have been held accountable. Mm-hmm. And so the thing about it is this is not a Democratic witch hunt. The guy who led the charge on the raid to his building in Florida, that guy was a Republican. The judges on the Supreme Court who told him that the election could not be overturned were Republican judges that he appointed. So Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have nothing to do with this. Nancy Pelosi has nothing to do with it. Chuck Schumer, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, Democrats have nothing to do with this. So this, for them to sit there and say that it's wrong for Joe Biden to silence his political opponents, Joe Biden is actually the guy that says we're going to let our opponents speak, we'll let them talk. He's not silencing anybody. Trump is doing this to himself, and if they want to have a conversation about that and they want to debate me on that, I'm open to that anytime. Trump is responsible mm-hmm. for his own downfall, not us.
Exactly, exactly. Okay. Another Trump rally in July, on July 29th, 2023. Not sure which one this was, but, you know, here is some commentary from the maggots who attend that Nazi rally. Just a little clip. Here it is.
Agree, communism doesn't work. Yeah. But extreme capitalism, as we're seeing right now,
does not
with
work.
This corporate capitalism, also has its problem.
How much money is too much money for one person?
It's a tough call. I know. When they get these billions, they're like, well, they really don't need it. Yeah, we agree with that.
Why Trump instead of Bernie Sanders?
What I look at is more progressives like the Bernie Sanders fashion stuff like that. We actually see a lot of the same problems.
And I would vote for a Bernie Sanders before I'd vote for like a Ted Cruz or a Marco Rubio.
What would it have taken for you guys to not go into the rally and to instead get ice cream with me and flight and left?
Well, first of all, you
have
to buy.
I have to.
All right, I'm buying.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, I'm talking about still Bernie Sanders. You know, I wish I just dropped that. That's a dead horse and everything. Okay, so the next point I'm trying to make now is Joe Biden kept prescription drug prices at $2,000 per year for seniors on Medicare through the Inflation Reduction Act. Interestingly, I think it was yesterday, the day before yesterday, Chris Christie was on a show. I think it was a show in Florida, inside Miami, or whatever the show name. And he was saying that if he becomes president, he'll cut Medicare and Medicaid. These Republicans still on that crap about cutting Medicare and Medicaid, calling it an entitlement program. Eric, how can we educate people on you know, the crap Republicans speak? Because Republicans are just fear-mongering.
You know what? The answer to that is quite easy and simple. I'll tell you this. When I debate with conservatives and Republicans about how Democrats and Republicans feel about Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and these other programs, I tell them this. I said, listen, this is not me making this up. If you want to actually know where they're at, go back and watch the videos, watch the debates, and hear what they had to say about it. One of the top Republicans who absolutely wants to eradicate Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security is Republican Senator from Florida, Rick Scott, who has constantly touted about cutting those things. He mentioned that in – I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm sure he might have mentioned it during the 2016 debates. He's mentioned it many times when he was he did it when he was the governor of Florida, and then they moved him to the Senate. And so the problem is now he has the audacity to come out here and say, oh, Joe Biden and the Democrats are lying about our stance on it. No Republican has said anything about cutting it when he has been one of the leading voices to talk about cutting it. So when I sit there and tell people, go back and listen to what Rick Scott said from 2017, 2018, and then compare that to now, he has completely flipped his stance because even he has enough common sense to know it's not a popular policy, but he still wants to stick with it because it's part of the Republican handbook. It's part of the conservative manifesto. And so that right there is what I'm telling people. If you want your Medicaid and your Medicare and your Social Security, Rick Scott is not your guy. Donald Trump is not your guy. Mitch McConnell is not your guy. Just like Bush and Cheney were not your guys. Because I'll tell you right now, the Democrats have done what they can to protect Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. They need to add more qualifications and expansions to it, extend it. This is what we're working on. And so it's a false narrative when people sit there and tell me that Republicans want to protect it. They've constantly talked about cutting it. Mitch McConnell's been talking about that for decades. And so that's
and, you know,
what we have to let people know.
Exactly. And the nerve of Rick Scott, who stole from Medicare and Medicaid, you know, he should be in prison. You know, but what did Florida do? Elect him governor. Not once, twice. Now he's a U.S. senator. Come on, man.
And you know what? Here's the thing about that. Rick Scott is by far one of the most crooked, one of the most corrupt politicians that this country has seen in the last few decades, even, I would say, because, number one, and so a lot of U.S. presidents come out of the White House, Democrat and Republican, with a lot more money than what their salary pays them. However, this guy came out of Florida. When he was governor for 8 years down there from 2010 to 2018, this guy came out of here with approximately $500 million. Somebody has to explain that. Because I can tell you right now, if Joe Biden came out the White House with that money, they'd be calling for him to be imprisoned with no due process.
Thank you.
I mean, you know, Elaine, Lori, somebody, like, what, am I making sense out of this?
Eric, I would like to jog your memory on something else. Remember when Dole, D-O-L-E, was running for president, and his mother went on different programs and begged her son not to do away with Social Security and Medicare? So this narrative was started by the Republicans back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, Bob
mm-hmm.
Dole, he ran in 1996 against Clinton.
Yeah. Didn't Bob Dole want privatize Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security? That was the battle cry back then when Bob Dole was a Republican nominee.
Yeah, Bob
Dole.
You know what? Here's another thing I'd like to add to that. A lot of people are criticizing the term Bidenomics because they think that it's equivalent or it sounds too much like Reaganomics. You can take any president's name and add the nomics suffix to the end of their name, whether it's Clintonomics, Bushonomics, Obamanomics, or Trumponomics. Here's the thing about that. The difference is you can argue that the word Bidenomics has a bad tone to it or a bad ring, but what did Reaganomics bring us? Reaganomics brought us, let's take everything we can or take a lot of money from the middle class and the poor and give it to the rich. I don't see Biden doing that. Now, yes, we know that Biden does have, you know, every politician, I think, to a degree, or most of them, they have some type of corporate connection or you might have a hand in but the problem is, Biden is actually one of the few in a long time that actually put a tax on the wealthy to help pay for a lot of these programs and these ideas that were the provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act and the American Rescue Plan. The state of Massachusetts just did a thing where they passed free school lunches, you know, for the kids. Mm-hmm. They did that by taxing the rich only 4%, which proves to people that when you tax the rich, you can fund these social programs and you can fund these domestic things and these aspects to make people's lives better, to make them afford things. That's how you do it. California is on track to do it. I think Michigan just did it. A few other states are on track to doing it. This objectively proves that these are popular policies. Reaganomics is what killed a lot of the middle class and is killing the poor. Bidenomics is not quite doing that. So I would argue that the term Bidenomics is a lot better than Reaganomics ever was.
Exactly. And the imposition of 15% minimum corporate tax and some of the largest corporations who don't pay taxes to begin with in America, this ensures that they pay their fair share as part of the Historic Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. Corporations may start paying their own, you know, their fair share. 15% minimum, I was hoping for like 30-35% because these damn people can own it. If a CEO can make $400 million, you know, for doing what they do, and a car increase at the minimum wage, or even pay the taxes, you know, what the hell? You know, everything the Republicans do is cutting taxes for the wealthy. We saw it in the 4 years in Trump administration, the largest tax cut in the history for corporations and rich individuals. That has to stop, you know? Another thing is recommitting America to the global fight against climate change. And we rejoined the Paris Agreement, something that Trump pulled us out of, was strengthening the NATO alliance in support of Ukraine after Russian invasion by endorsing the inclusion of world military powers, Sweden and Finland, the newest people to the NATO alliance. We authorized assassination of Al-Qaeda terrorists who became head of the organization after bin Laden. I can't even pronounce his name. Ayman al-Zuhawi. You know, he gave Medicare to the poor.
Yeah, Al-Zawahiri. Al-Zawahiri.
Mm-hmm. Joe Biden gave Medicare the power to negotiate prescription drug prices through Inflation Reduction Act, which also reduced government health spending. You know, he boosted the budget for the IRS by nearly $80 billion to reduce tax evasion and increase revenue and to get more tax agents out there to go after people who, you know, don't pay the taxes. You know, so he created more jobs in 1 year, 6.6 million jobs, and any other president in U.S. history. And that was just like the 2 year mark of his presidency. I mean, come on, his records speak for itself. You know,
the number of jobs that Obama had added in his 8 years, Joe Biden did that now. You know, Obama added 12 million jobs to the economy, which was great. Joe Biden added 13 million jobs to the economy in less than 4 years. So, I mean, for anybody to sit there and say that this president is incompetent or unsuccessful or ineffective, listen, Mehdi Hasan had put it best. He said it best, is that and this is why I do believe that out of all the media sources and a lot of the corporate media on television, MSNBC is arguably the best because you have people on there that actually do the real analytics and give a more proper analysis compared to some of the others, is that a lot of people are either ill-informed, they're uninformed, they're misinformed. And, you know, and this is why I can't stand it. People still watch Fox News and Newsmax. You know, the whole thing about it is a lot of the media is not emphasizing on these accomplishments that we're talking about. The medical debt went down from $200 billion to $88 billion, as I had alluded to earlier. As you said, child poverty decreased. Homelessness is decreasing in certain areas. Over $500 million are invested into HBCUs. He gave $15 an hour to the federal workers and the contractors. He just did a thing where he gave a pay increase to construction workers. And I think they're working on helping the rail workers as well. He onshored 350,000 jobs, meaning he brought jobs from overseas, brought it here. He invested over $60 billion in creating manufacturing jobs. Well, you know, and again, it's putting a pause on the U.S.-Saudi weapons deal, give them weapons to commit genocide in places like Yemen and all that. I said this administration is definitely moving in the right direction. Some people would argue that it's slow, but sure. But, you know, we're getting closer and closer to that point, and more people are being positively affected. As long as they continue to use their resources and allocate it properly, allocate their finances properly, and still continue to get up and work if you can. And so that's all Democrats are promoting. And, you know, and like I said, their only problem is the way that they message. They have to be in front of the cameras talking about this. They have to, and like I said, Gretchen Whitmer and Gavin Newsom are two of the best top Democrats I've seen that whenever they put something out, they make sure that their people put it out there. And they say, hey, we invested this money to help apartments and to fix roads and to build more bridges and to build libraries and courts or whatever. That's what the Biden-Harris administration and a lot of top Democrats need to do, and they have to get better at that. And that's exactly why I do my show the way I do it, because I consider myself to be an unpaid messenger in a way. So that's why I'm here to talk about this.
Right, right. And I'm glad that the Violence Against Women Act is reauthorized to 2027. And he signed a PAC Act to address service members' exposure to burn pits and other toxins. Republicans love saying, oh, you know, we're for service members and we're for law enforcement and what have you. But they do things that are different and opposite to what Joe Biden did by signing the PAC Act. He signed the CHIPS and Science Act, strengthened American manufacturing and innovation, like you said. He halted all federal executions after the previous administration, reinstating them after a 7-year freeze. You know, so the Republicans love to claim that they're pro-life, but, you know, you can see how zealous they are when somebody's on death row. You just want to kill them. They get great thrill from that. You know, they're passionate about the death penalty. I mean, you know, how can you be pro-life and, you know, want to kill people? Some of these people have been exonerated because of DNA evidence. you know, and they still want to kill these people. I mean, I don't know. These Republicans are, oh, I can't even find a word to actually describe them. You know, they're pathological,
evil.
And mendacious. They're
evil. Thing.
They're evil. Yeah, yeah.
I can't think
people,
of any other word.
Yeah, there's a special place in hell. Hell does exist for people like Donald Trump and this kind of crop of Republicans. Because I can vaguely remember back in the 70s where when Richard Nixon did Watergate, the third great burglary at Watergate Hotel, where he broke into the Democratic headquarters in Watergate Hotel. And they were caught, and Republicans back then put America first and the Constitution first and democracy first. They didn't put party or president first, you know, and that's what lacking in the Republican Party today. You don't see any Democrats or in a progressive, you know, like, you know, have this Masonic, you know, worship of the Biden family or Joe Biden. If Joe Biden or any Democrat, the foolishness, we'll call them out on it. When they look good, we'll praise them for it. But no matter what happened, these MAGA Republicans will just support Trump. And it's very repulsive. This is what not what Abraham Lincoln, this is not what Eisenhower or even Reagan or Gerald Ford, when they led the party, this is what not what the Republican old school party is about. You know, do you think in the near future that Republicans can get their act together and be the party of Lincoln again, or is it too late? Are we witnessing the beginning of the end for the Republican Party, Eric?
You know what? That one is really, really difficult to say because, as you had stated, and as a lot of us already know, the Republican Party in the 50s and before that was actually the party of the people. And that, I would say the 40s and the 50s was probably the best time where you had, I mean, despite things like Jim Crow and all the other things that were going on, at least you had two political parties that for the most part, they agreed on a lot of things in terms of what needed to be done for the people. Back then, Republicans like Truman and Eisenhower, you know, they were in favor of Social Security and expanding in that and helping more people get that. Medicare, Medicaid. By the time we got to the 60s, when Richard Nixon was running for president, and by the time so Richard Nixon, to my knowledge, ran for president twice, maybe possibly three times, and he finally got elected in 1968. And by that time, there was a shift, and I don't know the exact details, but there was a shift somewhere where the Republican Party started connecting with big money and big multimillionaire and billionaire conglomerates that when they got in bed with them, they basically were instructed to go against the will of the people on many things. They were nowhere near as pro-fascist and pro-extreme as a lot of the people that we see today, but it is – I noticed that it got worse and worse over time, and as I read through some of the history, obviously a lot of those presidents long predate my time, but it's looking through Nixon, looking through Ford, looking through Reagan, looking through the Bushes, and now looking at Trump, it's just – it's gotten worse and worse over time. Here's one theory that I have. So even if Trump either loses the election or he goes to prison and we don't have to see him politically ever again, you still have a lot of pro-Trump candidates. So even though Trump may not be here, you still have Trumpism still here. Yeah. Think about it like this. We still have people that are pro-Nazi that exist. We may not have Hitler anymore, and we may not have any of the people that were supporting Hitler during the 40s and whatnot. A lot of those people are obviously deceased now, but it doesn't mean that that ideology doesn't still live on. So even without Trump, we still have Trumpism, we still have Nazism. And I'm not saying Trump started Nazism, but, I mean, a lot of his people embrace it and encourage it. People like Scott Pruitt, Stephen Miller, and Steve Bannon, and a lot of the other fascists that he had in that White House. So as long as the Trumpism ideology continues, I don't think that the Republican Party is going to go back to the ways of Dwight Eisenhower and Harry Truman. As far as people like John McCain, Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, like that group, I would say that that's a maybe, but even in that particular sense, they're still not as pro-people and for the people as they should be. But as long as – so with Trump being gone, it pretty much means that the baton of fascism And neo-Nazism mm-hmm. is passed on to people like Marjorie Greene, Lauren Boebert, Jim mm-hmm. Jordan, Matt Gaetz. As long as they're here, because they're a lot younger than Trump, and so they still have plenty more time. With Trump being gone,
right.
they're just going to continue the mantle. That's why Jim Jordan is on Twitter tweeting things left and right, mm-hmm. making up lies about Joe Biden. So you know what? To answer your question more simply, I don't see the Republican Party going back to the Truman-Eisenhower way anytime soon. And if they do, mm-hmm. I'd be incredibly shocked.
The thing is, though, you know, when you talk about Marjorie Greene and Bobo the Clown from Colorado and Rafe McForkin from Florida, Matt Gaetz, these people are all intellectually retarded, dumb. The stupid shit that come out of their mouth daily, you know, where, you know, things like conspiracy theories about laser beams firing down and setting California fire, you know? I mean, have you gone to the cliff's end as a country that, you know, things can just be said and, you know it's bullshit, but yet you still vote for that person? I mean, I can't fathom that. I can't wrap my head around how stupid one has to be to read a follow-up somebody like Marjorie Greene or Rafe McForkin, Matt Gaetz, and Jim Jordan, the child molester who, when he was coach at the Ohio State University wrestling team, he covered for the coach who actually raped these young men. You know, Matt Gaetz, another child rapist. I mean, God damn it, man. How can you support the Republican Party? I think it went bad when in 1964 they nominated Barry Goldwater. Barry Goldwater let the floodgates open when he had Fred Cork, the John Birch Society, the evangelical movement, and white nationalists come into the party and just like the shit on everything that the party stood for back then, you know? And then progressively, you know, it came to a head when Reagan was elected in 1980, and it just got worse ever since. That's my take on it. And when will they cease to exist as a party? Give it the next generation. Give it like 20 years. When, you know, the majority will be the minorities, where black mixed with Jew, Hispanic mixed with Native American, and the white majority in that way be there anymore, and then that way have the power that they had once before since 1776, or since 1666, when the ships came over from England, running away from religious persecution and whatever persecution, you know? And they're going to be in for a rude awakening when that happens, because we're better than this, and within a generation, the Republican Party will cease to exist because of their fascism, their sexism, their homophobia, their transphobia, all sorts of phobia. They're going to be non-existent anymore. And let them try starting in a civil war. You know, you don't think liberals and progressives have guns to? Bring it. Bring it, please. I'm begging you. Bring it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Elaine, what do you have to say about all this?
Well, I'm kind of lost my train of thought when David was talking. Let me jump in a little bit. Let me collect my thoughts, please.
Okay. Hey, no problem, mm-hmm. no problem. What about you, Lori?
Mm-hmm. I think Lori hung up on everything. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
hey, so
mm-hmm. I guess a better question would be this. So, Elaine, where do you think the Republican Party will continue to go? Do you agree with my take that it'll continue to be fascism as long as the MAGA crowd is involved? Do you think there's any hope that it'll go back to the Eisenhower ways, or what
well, one of the
that?
Things that we have – oh, that – okay, that I got my train of thought back. One of the things that we have to keep in mind is this. Just because Trump will no longer be in office, we can't give up our narrative. We have been too quiet too long. The majority of the people in any country are the peaceful, quiet people. But we have got to learn. That's why I try to put something that everybody would understand. We have got to learn to be a symphony orchestra. We have got to learn to keep playing our tune over and over and over and over until they're gone. All of them.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the Orange
mm-hmm.
Monster. We have to keep singing this tune until the Bobbitts are gone and the Jordans are gone and et cetera. And even John James here in Michigan, man, he is really showing his stripes. He is business, mm-hmm. as far as he's concerned. The average person can just pay through the nose and go to hell. So, and we have to bring
this
to the top. And we have to keep at it.
You know what? You know what? It's very important that you bring that up, and I agree. The whole thing about that is this, is that, and as I've alluded to before, you know, and I emphasize that on this show a little more, too, I'm looking at each of the MAGA candidates in Congress and in Senate, and I'm looking to see which Democratic candidates are running against these people. I would strongly encourage Marcus Flowers to run against Marjorie Greene again. If he's not, yeah. I'll look at who else is running. Here's some good news that we have. We do know that Adam Frisch, Democrat in Colorado, he's running against Lauren mm-hmm. Boebert again. And from what I can tell, he seems to be on the verge of outraising her. Right now, they both are statistically tied in the polls. They both are right now at an average of 44-45%. I think the last one I saw a couple mm-hmm. months ago, I think they both were at 45. So mm-hmm. I think this is a good advantage for him because mm-hmm. he is in Colorado, which is obviously it's kind of a mixed state. I mean, I know they have a Republican Congress people there, but they have a Democratic governor. And I know that he can't go too far left, so I don't expect him to be like a member of the squad or a Bernie or anybody like that. He's just right. And I feel that as long as he doesn't get caught up in any scandals or controversies and he continues to talk to more and more people that he hasn't already talked to, this is an advantage for him because it gives him an opportunity to get his name out there more. And I think this time around, if they stay on it, and as long as Lauren Boebert continues to hurt herself every time she opens her mouth, I think Adam Frisch mm-hmm. will just have a chance to beat her this time, even if it's not in a landslide, because she didn't win in a landslide mm-hmm. either. She won by about 500 or 600 votes. Maybe it's possible that he can top that as long as we stay on it. And I'm going to continue to promote him, and I'm going to do a show where I am supporting his candidacy. So he has my endorsement.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. And Governor Jared Polis, he is the governor, Democratic governor in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was an entrepreneur before, education leader and public servant for many years. And after launching several successful companies, Governor Polis committed himself to making sure other Coloradans had the opportunity to pursue their dreams through founding schools for at-risk students and new immigrants, and started nonprofits to help veterans. So prior to serving as governor, Polis served as a state board of education and represented Colorado's 2nd Congressional District. So he put his mouth where his money is, and I can foresee him in the future running for the Democratic nomination in 2028 because he has a stellar record of public service, of helping veterans, and having nonprofits to help veterans, and he is pro-immigrant. So I think that will play out well nationally.
Yeah,
Eric and David. And when we do get our people aboard, and if they do not do what they're supposed to do, if they turn out to be megas, we mm-hmm. get them out. We don't play with them and say, mm-hmm. well, they're a Democrat, we'll give them a chance. No. You don't do what you're mm-hmm. supposed to do, we're gonna replace you in a heartbeat. And we've got to start getting strong on mm-hmm. that point. Just because they got a D
exactly,
at their name,
Elaine,
it doesn't give them mm-hmm. poetic justice to try to screw us.
Right.
We get
like,
rid of them.
Example, in Arizona, you know, Kyrsten Sinema, U.S. Senator, who's an independent now, she knew full well she couldn't run as a Democrat in the primaries because of what she did. You know, she promised all these things, saying, yeah, I'm a progressive. Within 90 days of her being U.S. Senator, she took money from NRA, she took money from big tobacco, big pharma, you know, big corporations on Wall Street. Let's forget about the promises she made to her constituents. You know, she went full right wing. You know, she
sure
had enough cause of progressive.
You know what? Let me tell you something. When Kyrsten Sinema first came out back in 2018, and I'm sure you probably did too, I supported her, and I was glad for her. You know, I congratulated her for her win. I have tried since then to get her on my show. I've connected with Democrats in Arizona who are obviously now against her. You know, the disappointment came when she voted against the $15 minimum wage increase. She voted against the original legislation for the Infrastructure Act. And then she obviously took at least $900,000, probably even more than that, from Big Pharma. I don't know exactly if she took from the NRA, and if she did, I don't know how much. I didn't look into that part. But I think that, and this is what I actually tried to do. I actually reached out to her staff, and I've talked to two of her people. I talked to one person who was a scheduler for her, press scheduler, and I spoke with her on the phone, and I emailed her, and I said, hey, I just do the show from my house. And if she just wants to go live on Facebook or Instagram or even Twitter, if we can do that, I'm open to doing that. Just want to ask her a few questions. It's going to be strictly about her. I talked to one of her deputy schedulers from her office in Arizona. The scheduler was from D.C. And I talked to that person, and they were trying to make arrangements, and we were talking about it, and we were on the verge of getting her. But then at the last minute, she backed out, and then she said or she refused, and she claimed that she was too busy. Even though we know that she's been avoiding questions from the media left and right, there's literally videos of her sitting on an airplane ignoring people as they're trying to ask her questions about things. And I got to tell you, after that, I had to make the announcement to say, you know what, I'm dropping her. I have to drop my support from her because this will not do. Okay, she may not be quite as disgusting as a Lauren Boebert or Marjorie Greene, but just the very little things that she has done alone, it's kind of a betrayal and it's a disappointment, and we expected much, much better. And so this is why I say the Democrat who's running for her seat, Ruben Gallego, he is on the verge of outraising her. More than likely, he's going to be the Democratic nominee because she decided to go independent now. We still don't know exactly who the Republican nominee is going to be. It's going to be either either Blake Masterson or Carrie Lake, because those are the top two people that Trump endorsed from the state when they ran for their spots individually. So Ruben Gallego is the person that I'm supporting to replace Kyrsten Sinema for 2024. To those of you who are not familiar with him, I'm going to do a show about him. I'll tag the link to his website and his campaign in my comment section below when you see the video when I release it. So I say Adam Frisch for Colorado to replace Lauren Boebert and Ruben Gallego to replace Kyrsten Sinema in Arizona.
Yes, and Ruben Gallego, the congressman, he outran Sinema by 5-1 or something like that, 5-1. So I was shocked and surprised if Sinema gets more money for his money. I think it's going to be a three.
I mean, what do you think, Elaine?
I think that's great. Well, you know, it's a start. It's a start. And when a candidate goes out and raises their own money, that shows you that they're willing to go out there and do the job.
Now, Elaine, if I can ask, what city do you live in again, and who is your congressperson?
Oh, God, they changed the boundary so many times.
You know what? Listen, if you don't have the answer to that, it's okay. Sometimes I lose track of who's in my area.
Let me think on that. They changed the boundaries a couple times.
You're talking about you're talking about the gerrymandering and redistricting.
Yes.
Okay,
it's not Debbie Dingell.
I don't even know off the top of my head who runs my.
It's not Debbie Dingell, and Debbie. I think Debbie Stabenow is ours, and and John James, Gary Peters.
Oh, so you're in District 10.
Debbie Stabenow is mine too because she's a U.S. senator, so she's overall.
Okay, well then that's nine.
Yeah. So John James,
I know it's
would be
Peters,
District 10, Congressman District 10.
Peters and John James.
Okay.
Okay.
So, yeah, you're in Congressional District 10 in Michigan.
Yeah, to 10, yes.
So John James is a congressman over there. So I guess that means I should look into the Democratic candidates who are running for his seat.
Oh, he's just he's just going out there and touting everything for, you know, against the average person. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's against unions.
Yeah,
so he's against
the
same
guy that sat there.
He's against the, you know, the people making a decent living. And this man is, he's not honest. He inherited that business from his grandfather. He's not a self-made man. He's a phony just like the orange guy. And no, I will not use the orange guy's name.
That's okay. Right. We don't have to give him any more power than he already has.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and you know what? So, that's why I say it's essential that while we're on the subject of the Biden-Harris accomplishments, I would say that, and I don't have time to look into a lot of it now, and I will be between now and the next time I get on the show or host this show, I'm going to look into some of the stuff with a lot of the other Democrats in this country. We're talking other Democratic governors like J.B. Pritzker, Laura Kelly, Kathy Hochul, Gavin Newsom, Democratic congresspeople, Adam Schiff, Eric Swalwell, quite a few others, and our senators. And then, like I said, we need to, because it's not just about supporting Biden and Harris, it's about supporting Democrats top and bottom of the ticket. And we also have to, and I cannot stress this part enough, the presidential elections are not the only thing that matters. We have to pay attention to the governor's elections. We have to pay attention to the Senate races, the congressional races, the local courts, like your county executive and like the state Supreme Courts, who's the city council, all the way down to the school board, because every election matters on every level.
A big problem
exactly,
we have, and
exactly.
I've run across this two or three times, is they'll say the candidate, the post is, oh, good Lord, tonight's not my night for thinking. They'll say that it's nonpartisan. And I said, there's no such thing as nonpartisan. If these people keep running, they belong to a party. And we have to train people. We have to teach people that you have to find out what party do they belong to, whose convention do they go to, whose parties do they go to, and we and make sure they don't get in office if they don't go along with what we need for this country. And it starts from the bottom. Because your state officials look at what your city is doing, and from the state officials, then your government officials look at what the state officials are doing, and that's the way it works. It goes from the bottom to the top, not the top to the bottom.
Yeah,
and every election matters on every level in every single election, and I myself am guilty of not, up until a certain point, I didn't really know much about the local politics. I voted, you know, state and local stuff for the first time, I think, in 2018 for sure, maybe 2016. I know before that I had primarily just voted, you know, for the president. I backed Obama both times. And then there was Hillary in 2016. And then 2017 was when Gretchen Whitmer came out and she decided to run for governor. I backed her from the start. And since then, I backed, you know, city council in 2017. And so now I realize that the local and state elections are just as important as the presidential elections, if not more. And so we have to emphasize that too. Pay attention to who's running on your school board. Pay attention to who's running on your city council, state rep, state senate, the state Supreme Court, the Board of Education, the county stuff, the county prosecutor, all of that. The county executives, the county commissioners, all of it matters.
Yeah.
And we have to be careful on these people come up out of the woodwork and take on an issue. You know, all of a sudden there'll be somebody, they'll say, well, I'm going to make myself a rising star. I'm going to take on an issue because there was a couple deaths at the local high school, so with gun violence, so I'll take on that issue. Those people should be treated as suspect until they prove themselves. And that goes across the country. There's a lot of people who jump on the wagon, on the wagon, because of an issue, and they're pushed to do that. And we have to pay attention what they really stand for. Is that issue just a stepping stone? Once they get aboard, they do nothing. This is how some of those Republicans are stuck in.
Well, and unfortunately, that is the case with a lot of them, and. That's why Obama came out and said, you know, when he was campaigning for the Democrats last year, and he said, listen, Republicans, just explain your ideas. If you think that what we're doing is so wrong, you vote against all of our ideas and our pieces of legislation. You vote against gun control safety. You vote against health care. You vote against education. You voted against the stimulus checks. You voted against the Inflation Reduction Act, against the American Rescue Plan, COVID. If our solutions don't work, then what's your solution? If I was the person standing in front of the entire government, and let's say I just stood in the room with only all Republicans, and I'm standing in front of Mitch McConnell, Ted Cruz, Rick Scott, Lindsey Graham, all of them, and just say, you know what? If I'm wrong, then you must be right. Tell me how you're right. What is your solution, and what is the thing that you propose to get these things for these people without having to increase middle-class taxpayer dollars too much or to cost us? What's the plan? I would be shocked if any of them give me any type of legitimate answer and they actually try to follow through on it. I highly doubt that, but I've been wrong before.
Yeah, but the thing is, Eric, you know, a couple of weeks back, a reporter asked Mitch McConnell that very same question before he froze up. It looked like he was having a stroke or something, you know? And, you know, John Thune, the right-hand man for McConnell, came on and said, give more tax cut to the wealthy and the corporations because they can put back money in their companies to hire more people, blah, blah, blah. The whole shebang that I always say. But what these corporations keep doing is putting jobs overseas because the labor is cheaper. Mm-hmm. And they have dummy corporations where they put the money in just so as not to pay taxes, you know? And the media know this, but yet still not calling them out on it. You know, it's like they're trying to be Fox News or something. You know, it's frustrating. You know, they buy back their own stocks, you know, and they're not giving raise of pay to the workers and everything. Republicans stand for nothing. All they want is to bring tax cuts for the wealthy. We've seen it in the past 4 years, and every Republican since Reagan, tax cuts for the wealthy. They don't stand for anything else. They want to get rid of the Department of Education, the Department of Energy. They want to get rid of the FBI. You know, come on, man. Stop voting Republican. And I think this is a manufactured thing by the mainstream media, where they talk about Biden's age and not focus enough on his accomplishments, and Democrats getting sucked into it, you know? What's your take on that, Eric, and Elaine? Do you think the media should stop talking about Biden's age and focus more on their accomplishments?
I would say they for sure need to cover more of the accomplishments aspect. It's one thing to mention his age here and there, but my problem with that is that when you talk about that too much, it makes more people concerned. And I'm not saying that there isn't a legitimate concern there, but at the same time, as we stated earlier, the Bidenomics, for the most part, is working just fine for many Americans. And, you know, Biden is old, Trump is old. You could say that about a lot of people who ran. You could say that about Hillary. You could say that about Bernie. You could say that people in our Congress and Senate are old. We got Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Mitch McConnell. Here's the thing. I just say that one thing that I know for sure that a lot of liberal and conservative voters can agree on is that, yeah, for the most part, we want a lot more younger people to run the show, you know, regardless of, in some cases, that whether we like him or not. I think that Gavin Newsom and Gretchen Whitmer would be the best team for 2028, not just because of their age, but also because of their accomplishment. I think their age helps a lot because they're in their, what, early 50s now? They're both between, what, 50 to 55 years old or something like that. And and I think that helps. But, you know, I just say that, you know, age does come a concern in certain factors, I guess, depending on – I mean, when you look at somebody like Dianne Feinstein, who I think has been a great leader and a great official throughout her years, but now, I mean, she's recently been hospitalized and she's losing her memory. And I mean, she just turned 90, and I think it's a great age. And I think at this point, I don't know why they contemplated on having her run again, because we have plenty of great options. I mean, we have Barbara Lee, we have Katie Porter, and we have somebody else, Adam Schiff or Eric Schwartz, one of them is running. And so, I would think that she should just retire and just go home and just rest and spend time with the grandkids or whatever. And people should understand that that's not discriminatory towards age. It just means that this is better for that person's health, and we have other people to carry on those ideologies and to continue your legacy and to do good for the people, because at the end of the day, it's still the state of California, which means it's a 90% Democratic state. So whoever the next senator is over there, they're going to do just as good, if not better.
And the thing about it, though, the U.S. Constitution says you have to be 35 years, a minimum of 35 years old to run for president. So why not make it, a maximum age of how long you can serve? Because we had Chuck Grassley in there. Next time he's running, he'll be 96 or 97 years old. We had Ted Kennedy, God bless his soul. He was a good man. He, you know, was up there in age. We'll have Mitch McConnell, who stroke out in front of the cameras there, Dianne Feinstein, whoever. It's not about ageism. Look at Reagan when his second term was coming to an end, 1988. He stepped during cabinet meetings. He signed papers and documents he didn't have any understanding of. You know, given guns, train gun, arms, the arms deal for hostages with Iran, things like that. You know, so there should be an age limit of how long you serve. You know, that's my take on it. There should be a constitutional amendment.
I was actually just talking to somebody about that earlier, and I think that, and see, it's kind of difficult to put a cap on it now. If it were, here's the thing. When it comes to term limits in Congress and in the Senate, if we were to have that, I think that that should also tie in with the age of the person who is there. So if you have somebody who is, let's say, who just got elected to Congress at age 35, well, yes, and if they're a really good congressperson and if they're a really great representative, they're doing well for their people, then, yeah, I think that they should be there throughout their 30s, throughout their 40s, 50s, and 60s, and maybe cap it off at, if somebody just got elected at the age of 62, then I would say, okay, well, you have 8 years. Now, that's not to say that people who are in their 70s or older are not, you know, sharp or whatnot. To me, it depends on the individual. So it's really kind of hard to say full yay or full nay on that. It, to me, it's the individual, what they're representing, who the constituents are, and, you know, how their performance doing. When I look at somebody like Mitch McConnell, to me, my problem with him has much less to do with his age and much more to do with who he is as a person and how he's operated as a politician, because he has voted against everything that Obama tried to put to the table. I'm sure he voted against a great majority of things that President Clinton tried to put to the table. And, of course, he's against a lot of Biden stuff. So, to me, Mitch McConnell is just as narcissistic. He's just as – he's bigoted. I think that he is, at the very least, he's passively racist and sexist, if not actively and not viciously. And he is pro-war. He's pro-corporate. I think that he's all about himself. So in many ways, he is basically just like Trump, except he knows how to shut his mouth.
I mean,
what do you think of this, Elaine?
I don't think we should have an age gap, and I don't think we should have term limits, because then you have musical chairs, and then you lose your good leaders. Now, if you start having term limits, after 8 years or 12 years, you're going to lose Katie Porter. I think Katie Porter's going to be there for a long time, and she's sharp. And I think that people have got to just judge themselves. They know when they're tired, and they know when they're going to retire. And if not, if we see that they're under stress, then we run. We sit down and talk to them, and we run somebody else. They need to be talked to.
The thing is with Dianne Feinstein, she don't want to step down. That's the problem we're having with Mitch McConnell, Dianne Feinstein, Chuck Grassley. They're old farts. Ronald Reagan was in there.
They don't want McConnell to step down. McConnell's done their bidding for those people over there in his state. Then let them suffer. As long as we work
on
the state that we need.
Here's one thing. Here's where I want to interject a little bit, and this is where I'm conflicted.
Okay, go ahead.
And this is why I usually, when that discussion is brought up, this is why I'm still trying to decide how I feel on the term limits, because I'm not all the way for it, but I'm not all the way against it either. it's so I wish that there was a way I could say, like, hey, for certain people, they can be there an additional 20 years, whereas this other person can only be there another 5 years. I don't think that that sounds fair because I'm trying to be as fair as possible. Now, like I said, my problem with Mitch McConnell is much less about his age. If Mitch McConnell was 35 years old or 45, if Mitch McConnell was 45 years old and he was doing the same crap that he did throughout these last few decades, I would still be against him just as much, the same way that I'm just as much against somebody like Marjorie Greene or Jim Jordan. And those people are relatively a lot younger than McConnell. But the thing about it is some of them are arguably worse than him in a sense because they are more openly embracing the fascism, neo-Nazi aspect and ideology. So, I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me to answer that question as far as the term limits. I would have to look more into the pros and the cons of that. I would say, Elaine, I do agree with what you're saying for the most part, that it depends on the individual and they know how they feel. It's kind of like how somebody is working at a job at a certain age. It's going to come time for them to retire because they want to, you know, some people do it at 60 or 62. Others are still energetic enough they can do it at 70, 72. And I applaud that. So I would say that, I mean, you're right on that. It really does depend on the individual. But when you look at somebody like, the best example that I say is that when I look at somebody like Joe Biden, who obviously has had many great accomplishments throughout his political career, that whether he wins or loses the next election, and obviously we hope that he wins another term, he does a couple years. If he wants to step down in the middle of the term and let Kamala Harris be the president for the rest of it, I'm perfectly fine with that too. If she decides to not run, and then we do get my personal dream ticket of Gavin Newsom and Gretchen Whitmer, then they will continue the Biden-Harris legacy, and they'll continue to do the good things that they've put to the table and also do many more things and greater things, like the things they've done in their states individually. There's a way you can keep the ideology and the policy running, but just have different faces.
But you aren't going to keep a lot of these politicians out because of the fact they're going to run their relatives. I have seen it in Michigan. We have term limits in Michigan. That is the worst thing and they put it in front of the voters. And we were fed a bill of goods by the Republicans. The Republicans wanted it. They wanted it because they can control it. They can control it. The good candidates that don't have big families and can't run their sister and their mother and their aunt and their grandmother and then back to them, we have lost a lot of good candidates that way. And you can sit down with Gretchen Whitmer and Mr. How do you pronounce his name? Anyways, you can sit down with them and they can explain to you exactly how it's not working. And it's not working in Michigan. We've lost a lot of good Democrats because of term limits. That's how this state ended up.
You know what? I'll tell you this, Elaine. You have a good point on that as well. And I'll also say this. Even though I can make the argument to say that I think it would be excellent that we continue Whitmer Newsom after Biden Harris, at the same time, what I want people to understand is that I'm not making the argument to say that, you know, every younger person is going to do better than every older person because there are some older people who do a much better job than some of the younger people. Obviously, Joe Biden is doing a hell of a lot better job with this country than a lot of these younger fascist Republicans are doing with their states and their constituents. Obviously, when you look at Joe Biden versus Ron DeSantis, I mean, somebody could probably point out something good that DeSantis did for his state. I haven't found it yet, but I tell those people, I said, well, look at what Joe Biden's doing with the country. It's a lot better there. So if it was Biden versus DeSantis, I mean, that's a no-brainer, obviously. So, I mean, yeah, so I agree with most of what you said. That's why it's still a complicated thing for me. I'm still conflicted on it. If there was a way that we could undo the term limits with Michigan, maybe that – I don't know if Democrats in our state are talking about that. I can bring that up to some of them and see where it goes.
Let me throw an example. Let's say you have a good state representative. Their last name is Smith, okay? And what does everybody say? Boy, Mr. Smith does a good job. Mr. Smith does a good job. So now you have the term limits. The 4 years are up or the eight years are up. Now Mrs. Smith runs. But what do her signs say? Smith. Oh, nothing else. They don't say Gladys Smith. They just say Smith. Well, Smith's running again, and he's done a great job. Well, we'll put her in, and she ain't worth a shit. what? She serves out her 4 years and gets her pension, and the family gets it. And then the husband decides, in the meantime, the husband decides he'll run for the state senate. So now his term limits are up. So he jumps back over to the representative. And that's what's happening in Michigan, and that's what will happen in Washington if we have term limits.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing is perfect.
Right.
You know, we do have some politicians that don't know when to give it up. Well, that's when we run a strong candidate against them. We sit down and we tell them, your time is up. Period.
Mm-hmm.
Your time is up.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Alzheimer's or you've got health issues and you can't think and it just isn't working anymore. And people can be talked to and we can do it. Nothing's perfect. But let me tell you, term limits is bad. It isn't a case of not being perfect.
And we'll have the Joe Manchin in Virginia or West Virginia, wherever it is. And I wish a strong Democrat would challenge him because you know, he's not a real Democrat. He votes for Republicans a lot of the times. He does everything in his way to embarrass Joe Biden, you know, because he plays kingmaker and everything with Christian cinema. You know, we need to get rid of Democrats like that. Not saying that we need yes men or rubber stamp for Joe Biden, but what Joe Manchin and Christian cinema are doing is playing kingmakers and deliberately halting progress. You know, and have
I understand that, David.
Why?
What we have to do then is turn other states blue. Eric, what do you think?
You know what? That's another thing that's part of my strategy with this whole thing about – so there's a hashtag online that I started. It hasn't yet become successful, but I'm telling more people about it. It's called SOMER, which is S-O-M-E-R. It stands for strategize.
Uh-huh.
Organize, mobilize, energize, realize. And by doing that, we get out, vote blue no matter who. We're slowly but surely turning more states blue. Arizona went blue after 2020. Georgia is still kind of mixed, but there's a lot more blue there compared to what it used to be, so that's changing. Florida is still a half and half. I think Florida has a much more chance than what people realize and give it credit for. The only reason I say that is because we know that Bill Clinton was the last Democratic presidential candidate to do really well in Florida. Now, even Obama, even though he just barely won Florida, he struggled there. He beat McCain by only 3 points down there, and he beat Romney by, like, barely half a point. Of course, we know that Trump was going to win Florida both times, but Biden had a lot better chance in Florida than Hillary did. And so I say that with a lot of these states having a chance to turn blue, I'm trying to execute that strategy in many other states. Now, as David said earlier, some of these states are going to be next to impossible, especially when you're talking about the deep south like Louisiana or Mississippi or Arkansas and places like that. But you can still grow more blue presence out there. And by turning more and more states blue, that means we are to have a higher chance to elect more blue representatives, blue senators. Mm-hmm. And that way when somebody, if something happens to somebody on the Supreme Court and we can replace them with, you know, a real judge – who, you know, is sensible, preferably a liberal.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you fix the judiciary imbalance. And when we have Democratic presidents and we don't have to worry as much about them being blocked, part of the way to turn these states blue is not just about electing blue leaders. You have to talk to a lot of the undecided and independent voters down there and convince them why they should vote blue. You have to start from the bottom. You work your way to the top. The more people in Georgia realize that the Republican Party is not that good for them, and the more that they learn the accomplishments of people like Biden Harris, people like Pelosi, people like Schumer, and even like Stacey Abrams when she was a representative down there for 12 years, she helped cancel medical debt for tens of thousands of citizens down there. If more and more people saw that, she probably would be governor by now. And so part of turning these states blue is by talking to the voters as well, and that's another thing that I'm working on. That's why I'm going on these different online group pages and looking for independent and blue voters in these swing states because a lot of the swing states are the key because those are the biggest block of independent voters. When you turn Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Minnesota blue, there's a higher chance of turning Georgia blue. We get to that point, that's a success to turning more states blue.
I think you also turn a state blue if you've got a hardcore red state, you start turning the state blue by starting at the bottom. Start turning the bottom blue.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start people understand the good.
A few years ago, I was watching a segment from Samantha Bee, and her co-host or friend or whoever, they went to the state of Kentucky, and I think this was back in 2018 or 19. They went to Kentucky, and they asked many, many voters what they think about Mitch McConnell and how likely they are to support him. And from what I remember, not a single one of them had anything nice to say about him. That makes me question how he keeps getting elected. And I think he's getting elected for one of two major reasons. And I try not to make these type of assumptions, but they always assume that when we win, we cheat. Mitch McConnell has an average approval rating of Kentucky between 18 and 20%. That's the same approval rating that Dick Cheney had when he was vice president. And my question is, if that's the case, he must be winning because of one of two things. Either A, there's a cheat, but if that's not the case, the other plausible theory that I have is I think that a lot of people down there, sadly, are still not turning out to vote in droves like they should be doing, which is another reason why I always say on this show, this is why we have to continue to emphasize the importance of voting. We can't sit here and pretend like voting doesn't matter just because it's not the presidential election, which is why I say you got to pay attention to who your president is, but also pay attention to who your governor is. Look at your senator. Look at your congressperson. Look at your city council, your mayor, your state judges. This all matters.
The school board person.
And a lot of people still aren't seeing that. And so I think that's why people like McConnell and those others down there are still getting elected in these places, despite the fact that some of these are hardcore red states. I mean, Elaine, what do you think of that?
I really do think that that's what's happening. Have you ever talked to somebody that will say to you, oh, I voted in the presidential election. How did you vote? Did you vote a straight ticket? No, I only voted for the president. So then what happens is the popularity of each candidate going down the ticket, they're working on the people that know them. Judges are a good example. A judge will get in time and time and time again, 400 or 500 votes. Why? Because he knows 400 or 500 people. Nobody else is voting
for him. Well, you know what? And like I told you earlier, I understand the reason why I can't totally fault some people for not paying full attention is because, like I said, I didn't pay that much attention to politics prior to 2016. And like I said, I voted for Obama both times, and I backed him. I think in 2012, if I remember correctly, when he ran against Mitt Romney, I voted for Obama for the president, and I think I voted for Debbie Stabenow for the Senate. And to tell you the truth, the rest of the ticket, I don't even remember at this point if I even picked people or if I just voted Democrat straight down ballot and not really knowing who the rest of those people were.
Why do you think the Republicans get so upset with the unions? Because the unions will have discussions about the candidates. That's why the Republicans get so upset with the unions at election time. They'll have a meeting and they'll say, okay, these are the candidates that are – and the unions have just started doing this heavily. They'll say, these are the candidates running, this is the Republican running, and this is what they stand for, and this is the Democrat, and this is what they're standing for. And they're starting to do that with the judges. They don't tell you who to vote for. They just tell you what the story is about each candidate. And you can walk out of the meeting knowing more than when you walked out. I mean, than when you walked in. You can walk out knowing more about the candidates. And the unions have started doing that. And boy, I'll tell you, the Republicans are really upset over that.
Well, you know what?
No, go ahead, Eric. I'm going to point afterwards.
Yeah, right quick. I'll say, you're right on that, too. And I'll say this, and this is why I say, one of the biggest problems, and I don't know that it's going on as much now, but I've heard people in the past on both sides where they say, vote Democrat in this election or vote Republican in this election, or even the people who vote third party, they say Libertarian, Green, whatever. Here's the thing. Instead of just putting the party label to it, the problem is a lot of people will get turned off. And I had to learn this in a way over the years I've been involved, that it's not just about voting Democrat. You have to look at the person, because as we said earlier, there's a much big difference between Joe Biden versus Joe Manchin. Joe Biden has done things that have helped improve people's lives. Joe Manchin, for the most part, is not. He might have voted for a couple things here and there, but he's not somebody that we can rely on. He's not as bad as Trump or any of those other people, but still, he's not somebody that I'm holding my breath for. I'll say this. You have to talk about the candidate. So what I'm going to do, when I look more into the website and the campaign for Adam Frisch and Ruben Gallego and some of these others who are running, I'm going to look at their website. I'm going to talk about their stances and their issues on my show and put it out there. And instead of saying vote against the Republicans or we hate Boebert or whatever, just say I'm supporting this person because here's where they stand for and here's how their policies and their ideologies can help improve for the nation. We got to – Democrats need to start messaging that way. And that has a much higher chance of attracting undecided voters, because a lot of people get turned off because they say, oh, we just hate Biden or we just hate Trump or we hate whoever it might be. And so and to make another point, you know, from 2016, I think the only local candidate I remember voting for was Denise Terrell, who ran for school board. And that's because she approached me and gave me her card. And I didn't know who she was before that. So I voted for her there. The same time I voted for Hillary Clinton for president, and the rest of it I can't remember. I know since 2017 and up, I always voted locally. 2017 was the city council for the city of Romulus, 2018 Gretchen Whitmer, and so on and so forth. So at this point, I've much learned that's why the local elections are just as important as a presidential election. That's what Democrats need to talk about.
I'll be honest.
And the point I'm trying to make,
some of the other spots, such as judges, I have called different people, and I have said, what does this person stand for, and what does that person stand for? I don't ask them who to vote for. I ask them to tell me, because they're connected with them, what do the candidates stand for? And then I'm able to at least hopefully – I mean, you know, nothing's perfect. Hopefully that I'm voting for the right candidate. And I try now to vote all the way down the ticket, not just, you know, like you say, an all-blue ticket or an all-red ticket or an all-third-party ticket. There are a lot of nonpartisan races that are just as important. They're just as blue and just as red.
Now, what were you
going to
say?
We have to have also outlets. For people to explain this, you know, if somebody should call an office that you're having, I think the best way would be to say, okay, candidate R, this is what they stand for, blah, 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 and not stress the R. You're right, not stress the R or the D. And after you're done explaining what they stand for, it's going to be very clear to a progressive who to vote for.
Yeah.
Now, what was the point? Now, what was the point you were trying to make, David?
The point I'm trying to make is if we'll vote straight Democrat down the ticket line from presidential to school board to councilman, councilwoman, when we get good progressives in, we can change state laws and we could stop the gerrymandering. We could stop the attempt at early voting, meaning Republicans want to take that out because I think early voting is cheating. You know, all the that's what's happening in Michigan now, where you have a state legislator that is all Democrat. You have a Democratic governor, and things progressing smoothly and nicely. And the backwardness that Republicans have for the past how many years is being changed because of Democrats listening to what the people want. And we need to go state by state, try to get Democrats in these different key positions, statewide, locally, and federally, and that's how we can change the system. You know, with that, you know, Democrats could, like, grab the power back, and because Democrats listen to the people, Republicans listen to corporations and rich individuals. And, you know, once we get Democrats in, like what they're doing in Michigan and New Mexico, that's what We can have nationwide, even deep south. I have faith in deep south. Texas is purple. I think Texas in the next two election cycles can turn blue. You know, I want that one day in Utah, in Ohio, in, you know, wherever, Wisconsin. I want that to happen. You know, and not just the vote presidential years, like you said, but vote off presidential years and midterm elections. It's important. Yeah, so that's my final say tonight. We have 5 minutes left on everything. Okay, so now I want to thank Eric for coming in and co-hosting and sitting in for Laura tonight. I want to thank Elaine for calling in and making a contribution like she always does. And we'll thank you for listening tonight. So any final words, Eric and Elaine?
Yes. And so here's one thing I want to say, because I, you know, Elaine, I haven't really got the chance to tell you this much before. I know I missed a few segments, but I see that obviously, you know, you're one of the regular guests who call in. And I have to say that I admire your passion and sympathy for these things as well as we do. And I mean, you've always been an amazing guest. So I just wanted the opportunity to tell you that and, you know, to thank everybody for supporting me as well. So, I mean, Elaine, I'm glad to be in contact with people like you, and we're glad that you're here.
Wow, I'm That's overwhelmed. Right. I'm glad I'm sitting. I think I would fall down.
I mean, you know what? Listen, all of our voices matter. And so I think mm-hmm. that a lot of the things that you say, I would agree with at least a good 90 to 95% of it. There's others where I may not fully disagree, but I'm, as I said, I'm still conflicted on certain things, and I would kind of have to go more into pros and cons mm-hmm. of certain things. But at least we can have mm-hmm. an open, honest dialogue. And, you mm-hmm. know, I think that it is impactful. It's influential. And I think every voice counts, and we're all in this together. We're all a team. Mm-hmm. It's just like Hillary Clinton said, we're stronger together. You know, it's just like yeah. Michelle Obama said, you know, we go high. It's just mm-hmm. like, what was the other one I was thinking of? It's about just keep going. So I think we all contribute mm-hmm. to that. So, you know, mm-hmm. I appreciate you for that.
Eric, plug your show on YouTube. How can people find you on YouTube? That has to be the last word.
Yes. And so, so I use four major social media accounts: Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. My name, Eric Brantley, ERIKBRANTLEY. My name is the same on all of my accounts. To check my YouTube channel, it's youtube.com/@BrantleyEric. On that show, I mostly talk about politics. Occasionally, I dive into other things, you know, entertainment-related, TV shows, movies, games, mm-hmm. celebrities, all that stuff. If you want to check out my stuff, feel free to go there. If you can't find it, find me on Facebook or get it from David or Lori or whoever is friends with us on there. They'll send the links to you. Mm-hmm. All of my information is there. My number, you can call or text anytime. My email address, my Twitter, my Instagram, it's all there. Contact me. If you have candidates who are running in your area who you feel that I should reach out to and support, feel free to send them my way. Feel free to give them my mm-hmm. information as well. So anybody can contact me at any time.
Yes, thank you, Eric, and thank you for co-hosting, and thank you for listening and sharing all across social media. The website is kitchenpolitics123.com. We have great articles. You could read them, and we have merchandise going on sale soon. This has been Kitchen Politics 123 Radio Show for Sunday, August 20th, 2023. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico. Good night, Eric.
Good night, everybody, and have a nice night. Thank you, Elaine. Thank you, David. Thank you, Lori, for calling in. So, everybody, thank you, and have a nice night.
Yes, and Lori and Madeline and Susie, have fun wherever you are. Okay, so we'll see you tomorrow night, same time, same place, on Block Talk Radio for Kitchen Politics 123. Good night, and good luck.
As the sun rises, we raise the flag, a symbol of all that we hold most dear as Americans. Courage, opportunity, democracy, freedom. They're the values and beliefs that built this country and still beat in our hearts. But they're under attack by an extreme movement that seeks to overturn elections, ban books, and eliminate a woman's right to choose. Joe Biden has made defending our basic freedoms the cause of his presidency. The freedom for women to make their own health care decisions, the freedom for our children to be safe from gun violence, the freedom to vote and have your vote counted, for seniors to live with dignity, and to give every American the freedom that comes with a fair shot at building a good life. In small towns and big cities, we raise our heads, our eyes, our hearts for America, for the idea of this great country. Joe Biden is running for re-election to make certain that the sun will not set on this flag. The promise of American democracy will not break.
Democracy must not be a partisan issue. It's an American issue. As your president, I will defend our democracy with every fiber of my being, and I'm asking every American to join me.
For freedom, for democracy, for America, Joe Biden.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message. Too many people have been left behind and treated like they're invisible. Folks, my economic plan is about investing in places and people that have been forgotten. It's about making things here in America again. It's about good jobs. It's about the dignity of work. And it's about damn time we're doing it.
Joe Biden is determined to reward hard work. That's why he passed historic laws that rebuild our roads and bridges, invest in our factories, and bring back American manufacturing. Over 12 million jobs have been created, and Joe Biden's building an economy that leaves no city, no town, no American behind.
We're investing in places and people that have been forgotten. They've been invisible, but we haven't forgotten. We're building an economy from the bottom up and the middle out, where no one's going to be left behind.
Joe Biden, a president for all Americans.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Thank you. Thank you.